perfectly interlocking polygonal blocks that have been shaped to intersect and connect without the use of any cement, any mortar. You can also see where less advanced stonework has been placed on top of it and around it. Again, evidence that the Bronze Age Inca discovered this ancient site and attempted to either preserve or add on to the original structure. The difference in stonework is so starkly contrasting that it would be irrational to claim these styles and skill differences came from the same people at the same time. I struggle with the rationale behind that. Please just whack that subscribe button with your finger right now. That's the best way to support me. Drop a comment below in the comment section, like the video, share the video online. But above all else, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you tickle that notification bell as well, otherwise YouTube doesn't send you the videos.
Yeah, once again, here's the knob. But, you know, the center of balance, if you were going to try to lift that up, why would you put it here?
Yeah, exactly.
And the majority of rocks don't even have nubs on this particular wall of the Sun Temple. So...
yeah, that's what I mean when, you know, the mainstream tries to say, oh, it's for lifting and hoisting. It's like, well, why are they not on every single block?
Right.
If it was for lifting and hoisting, surely they'd be on every single block. And then again, going back to what we just saw, why are they on the bedrock?
Right.
Why are they clearly jutting out of the actual bedrock itself? So, no, it's still a real mystery, the nubs.
As we gain altitude, the architecture gains more sophistication, until we're faced with absolutely mind-boggling architecture. Precision-shaped blocks of andesite flow into one another with joinery so precise that it's hard to even comprehend, especially if we are assigning, once again, Bronze Age chisels, copper tools, stone hammers to the task.
Where we are at, actually, this is the temple entry door, because you can tell because it has a double door, and that's typically a sign that you're coming into a sacred site and into a temple. And so they leave the best work for the high temple work. And interesting enough, you see these knobs. Yeah. Right now we don't really know how to interpret them. But perhaps this was some kind of braille system that was telling something important about the builders.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Maybe they tell a story. Mm-hmm. Because what's the name of the native rope language?
Khipu.
It's the Khipu. So, you know, the fact that that comes from this kind of culture, the idea of instead of using words and letters, they use like knots.
Right.
These could be knots in rock.
Because you'll also see this at the Sun Gate when you're coming into Cusco.
Yeah.
Coming from the Lake Titicaca area. And right where you're going through the gate is where they have these knobs, and there's a lot of knobs. And it just seems to be at one section of the megalithic, and it's right when you're going through the portal. Where the gateway.
Right. Gosh, this is crazy.
You can't fit a human hair between some of these joints.
How finely that is going into the adjacent rock. So the joinery is just...
absolutely perfect. Second to none.
Perfect.
It's perfect. It couldn't be more... Right. It's perfect. Definition of it. Definition of perfect.
And clearly designed, in my opinion, as an anti-seismic engineering. It's to resist earthquakes. It's to displace kinetic energy.
Absolutely.
Throughout the structure.
Right.
Any sort of like geological kinetic energy, it would transverse through all of the different angles and dissipate throughout the engineering itself. So it clearly was designed with that idea in mind, which makes me wonder why they would do that with that idea in mind. Did they have a foreknowledge, some sort of understanding of cycles on this planet that they had to prepare for a cataclysm of some form?
Yeah.
Feels like they were preparing for something. Maybe they didn't succeed.
We have been here for a long time, and we may have been here with other beings as well. And maybe one's helping us out throughout history. I was just pointing this out, like right here. This, do you see this vitrification right here?
Very smooth.
As we see in places like Sacsayhuaman, this level of interconnecting polygonal blocks of solid andesite and diorite and granite would act as a form of kinetic dampener. What I mean by that is they would help in distributing force across the fortification rather than allowing force to concentrate into a local area and cause extreme damage. This type of architecture is designed to be incredibly resistant to damage. It is also in this area that we find a particularly strong concentration of the stone nubs, one of the most mysterious and yet simple looking oddities of the ancient world. We find them everywhere. We see these stone nubs on megalithic work in India, in Turkey, in Egypt, most of the areas where extremely impressive multi-ton precision engineered megalithic structures can be found. Stone nubs, stone protrusions such as these will also be found. Now, the mainstream interpretation of these nubs is that they are leveraging points, places for ropes to be attached for the original moving and placing of the blocks. Now, there are some glaring issues with this theory. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, we actually see stone nubs protruding from what would appear to be the literal bedrock. Okay, these nubs are coming out of the mountain from an area where they were clearly removing stone. So if the nubs are leveraging points, why are they on the natural rock face? The existence of stone nubs on the natural rock face also puts a spanner in the alternative theories, which is that these are signatures of blocks being cast, not cut, but cast from artificial stone. Marcel Fonti is the main proponent behind this theory, that ancients were using an artificial stone slurry that would harden into stone over time, and that the nubs are a signature of where water glass was being drained out of these artificial stones, water glass being one of the elements required for this artificial stone making process, which, to be fair to Marcel, he is actually demonstrating at his home lab in Budapest, and I'm going to be flying out there myself to see his work firsthand and decide if it matches up with what we see in the ancient world. However, the existence of stone nubs on the natural rock face does make this theory problematic for explaining all of the examples of stone nubs, unless we're making an argument that the mountain itself, of which this bedrock is a part of, is in fact artificial, which is a bit of a stretch for me. Up high on the mountain fortifications of Ollanta Tambo, we see stone nubs all over the place, not on every block, but distributed across the various facades of this complex. This is another reason why the mainstream leveraging point theory doesn't really hold weight, pun intended. Because they're not present on every block, and when they are present, they're rarely, if ever, in a logical position or of the correct size for lifting. They're not placed on all four corners or directly central. There doesn't actually seem to be a form of symmetry to it at all, at least not for an engineering or construction purpose. When you go to places like this, for example, the Coricancha, the Sun Temple in Cusco, this is supposed to be one of the most sacred and important sites, a royal site, and yet we come across totally smoothed down, beautiful ashlar block walls, and then suddenly, bam, there's a whole wall of these stone nubs concentrated in one particular area. So I don't think that they're leveraging points. You'd think that they would sand them down, like somehow smooth them down for a royal construction, and yet you have completely smooth walls and then a bunch of nubs on a very specific area. So I actually hold space for them being, of course, a signature of softening the stone, but it's far from conclusive, and I do actually think that it could be potentially a coded language, because we have to remember that the only so-called written records from the Inca, their history, their recollection of events in the past, none of it was actually written. They had an incredibly strange form of symbolic language called quipu, which was literally different lengths of string in various colors with little knots tied into each string at different points. And this actually corresponded to data, to language. This is how they kept records of events, and there would be designated quipu readers in the Inca cultures. Now, this format was almost completely erased from Peruvian history due to the Spanish conquistadors who burnt the quipu. Fragments remained, and some Inca shamans were taken into the Spanish courts to read quipu, but for the most part, the entire recorded history of the Inca Empire was destroyed, burned by the Spanish, completely erased from modern memory. So a lot of the history that we get from ancient Peru is from oral tradition, from the Andean shamans, oral history, and also the retelling of that history through the chronicling of Spanish conquistadors, who, let's be honest, would have applied their own bias to observing this history. So we have a very, very incomplete history of Peru. Perhaps these stone nubs are an even older form of quipu, where the knots are tied into stone, so to speak. Perhaps we're actually looking at the same type of coded language, but formed through stone rather than through string. It's just a thought. I don't know either way, and neither does the mainstream, and that's the important bit. It's all still a mystery. Stunning levels of precision joinery in stone that would defy all attempts from the Bronze Age to do this. This is where reality smacks you in the face a little bit. There is just no way these walls were created by a Bronze Age culture. Nothing about them is a demonstration of Bronze Age capabilities. Their existence is a direct contradiction to what could have been achieved at that time period with the extremely simple tools at their disposal. And this is not to denigrate the Inca, who managed to raise up an incredible civilization in a very short time span. The apex reign of the Inca lasted less than 100 years before the Spanish came in. They were present and growing before then, of course, but the height of Inca civilization lasted for about 90 years. These are not periods of time that can be easily matched up with the incredible megalithic work all across Peru. This is why we have to question the chronology. They were simply not around for long enough to be doing the type of work, especially because we can juxtapose this type of work with the work we know they were doing, the work surrounding Ollantaytambo and other sites, the simple stone, simple mortar using, easy to fabricate, not megalithic, not precision fitted, not multi-ton building projects. The differences are absolutely staggering when you compare the two. And a lot of the time it's very easy to compare the two because you've got megalithic right next to the simple stone structures. One of the most noticeable geometries incorporated into the design of these structures is the reverse trapezoid alcoves and windows. Here at Ollantaytambo, we see incredible examples of these shapes carved directly into the andesite and diorite stone, multiple times harder than the Bronze Age tools that we apply to their creation. And what's interesting is that you also see that these reverse trapezoid shapes were incorporated by the Inca into their own much simpler structures, which was a clear case of copying, of being inspired to attempt to replicate what they saw. And they did replicate them, albeit in a much simpler form with less impressive structural integrity and using softer stones. Nevertheless, the Inca were clearly trying to recreate the work they discovered at Ollantaytambo. Many of the blocks here also have a shine to their surface. Now, this is indicative of vitrification, which is an effect caused by when stone is heated at an extremely high temperature, at which point they partially melt, and then upon cooling, form a glassy, fused, or vitreous rock. So why are so many of the blocks in Ollantaytambo demonstrating this signature of vitrification? Did a high heat event impact this site? Because the temperature required for this far exceeds the explosive and heat potential of Spanish conquistadors with gunpowder. Okay, this requires heat on a far superior scale of intensity. This is something more akin to a major solar flare. And once again, inviting us to reconsider a far more ancient origin point for these incredible structures, potentially outlasting cataclysmic impacts on this planet over 12,000 years ago. As we approach the peak of Ollantaytambo, we're greeted by absolutely colossal slabs of rose quartz granite that we're supposed to believe were essentially rolled down the hillside towards the construction site. By the way, this area famously has very few trees, so log rolling is basically out of the question. How the mainstream models can claim these huge blocks of granite were quarried and then rolled or pushed down the hillside towards the building site? It's ridiculous.
Thank you.
probably have one of the most impressive Hanampacha thrones. Then they typically call these Inca thrones, probably pre-Inca. And you can see it's carved right out of the bedrock and beautifully smooth shaping and seats that are formed into the Hanampacha. So it's funny, most people just walk through and never notice this, but it's quite a beautiful, beautiful rock to look at.
Huh.
All its colors and...
Not a bad place for a seat.
Yeah, what a view, right? Super, super smooth, the seats. Just like the rock we saw down below. People focus on because of the cut going all the way through. And you can really see it on the side. So we're not sure what kind of technology actually like cut right through it. I mean, whether it was a high power saw or perhaps it, when it was soft, they could easily just
slice it off.
Yeah.
Wow, it goes all the way to here. How did Bronze Age era people pull something like this off, and why does this megalithic work seem to be spread around the hillside with huge breakage points, scattered like Jenga pieces, while the simple, rough-cut walls remain sturdy, stable and still standing? Basically, the weakest architecture outlived the strongest architecture. Now, if we're going to believe the Inca were responsible for all of this work, how do we explain the fact that inferior architecture showcases less damage than superior architecture? That right there is just a massive problem for the currently established chronology for these places.
Look at this. And this is rose quartz granite by the look of it.
Yeah.
The size of these is just absolutely incomprehensible when you consider that they were having to lift them all the way up here. This is rose quartz granite. These blocks are absolutely gigantic, and they precision cut them and then lifted them all the way up and constructed this. Now look at what we are seeing in front of us now. One of the most striking features at Ollantaytambo is this enormous wall of rose granite, complete with some strange details, including stone nubs of varying sizes protruding from the blocks, easily up to 100 tons or more, and yet it feels incomplete. It looks as if there was once much more of this, which would explain why massive blocks of granite are scattered across this entire area. Is it possible that these extremely large blocks just happened to be able to resist whatever force caused the rest of the structure to be essentially blown apart? Sliding down the hillside around it, embedded into the earth. I just find this particular area to be fascinating because of the size and the precision on display, and it even looks as if some of the areas have been plastered on, a very strange feature that we do see in other sites of Peru,
It's like a scoop mark, but it's almost like someone placed one of those paint-scraping tools over the stone and pushed down. These square indentations into solid granite are very odd, and once again, we have to highlight the absolute lack of tool marks. Where are the chisel marks? Where are the overcuts? There is essentially zero evidence of the tool that's being used to fashion the blocks.
And then look at these gigantic nubs. Oh my gosh.
There is a belief that these were once, I don't know, it is said that this was a puma, but it's kind of hard to see
it's
that.
It's hard to see that, yeah.
But look at even how the wedges in between, look how perfectly they are fitted into the rock here.
This is truly incredible.
And it is believed that these inner wedges are used to stabilize it even more.
Right.
So if there is an earthquake, they end up buffering and supporting the rock.
Just strange formations, evidence of novel material manipulation techniques, like this big chunk of granite that looks almost identical to what we see in Aswan Quarry in Egypt. Look at the scoops of stone that have been taken away from the main body of this rock in a fashion that makes it look as if it were once soft and scooped away like ice cream. It's just very strange, this particular block and the grid-like scoop marks at Aswan Quarry are strikingly similar and leave us with nothing more than questions about how this was done in such incredibly hard stone at a time when the tools were so primitive and softer than the material they're being used against. Around the back of these giant red granite blocks, we see evidence for Inca restoration, filling in the gaps that were made long ago with their more simplistic stone stacking techniques. The idea that these huge granite blocks were placed here and then filled in with simple stones by the same people seems irrational when you look at the surviving elements of the megalithic work that seems to excel above all else in precision and size. Precision joining of multi-ton blocks. There is nothing precise about filling gaps in with loose rocks. So I would argue that this is further evidence for Inca discovery and attempts to restore and maintain these sites. And it's again evidence that there was some form of major disruption, because where are the rest of the red granite blocks? They've clearly been moved apart, and you see these remains coming down the hillside. So many of them may have been blown away, leaving these gaps, which were then filled in by a later culture.
I haven't quite figured out what's going on here. How did these rocks get separated?
Huh.
You know, and this is Inca fill.
Yeah.
And more modern fill. But what caused them to separate like this?
Yeah, because obviously these would have been fused together quite tightly, like the others around the corner.
Right.
As you can see, actually just here with this one, that's how they would have been joining.
There's some very strong lateral force.
Another extremely interesting element of some of these blocks is the inclusion of what appear to be melding points between them, where perhaps a molten metal of some form was poured in. Now, this is not unique to Peru. It's actually found across the ancient world, even at sites believed by the mainstream to be prehistoric, suggesting a method of joining blocks together with an anchor of some form between each one. Now, this is not something we see on every block. In fact, it's not that common at all to see this. Even though we do find these examples across the world, it doesn't seem to be a standard practice on the stone building here. So it makes me wonder why these blocks? What is it about these blocks in particular that required what appears to be a form of anchor point?
Is that it had it had its paired rock over here.
Yeah, and
it
had fused them together through a binding agent, yeah, which would probably be metal.
Probably. But what kind of metal? Some people say copper, but would that have been strong enough?
Maybe bronze.
No, I believe there was somebody who he actually took a picture here, and it looked like drill holes, like from some machine. Let's see if it's over here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, so right over here. It's kind of hard to see, though.
Oh, yeah, no, you can see some striations. Hang on. Let's zoom in on that. Yeah, you can just about make out some striation marks.
Right. Yeah, he had actually a really good video where you can see it quite clearly.
And based on its hollowed-out nature, I imagine it was filled with something, and a metal would make sense. It would also make sense that the metal was looted out of the blocks long before modern times, which would explain their absence. Either way, it's a very interesting and often overlooked technique that is worth highlighting. Maybe you have a different idea for why they have been adding these into the blocks. One thing I'll say is just an additional thought. The rose quartz granite being used is piezoelectric. It naturally produces electricity when placed under mechanical stress. So if this effect was in any way being exploited by the original builders, then the anchor point, the connecting node between the two piezoelectric blocks, may have been copper or gold. It might not have served as a structural reinforcement element, but as an electrical conduction feature that could interact with the piezoelectric effects of the granite. So that's just a thought to consider in the ether. I just noticed while looking back on the footage as well that this very large block of red granite also has niches carved into the ends of it, which could have been anchor points between blocks. So just thought I'd bring that up since I only just noticed it while reviewing the footage.
Oh, it's a shame you can't go over there.
There's
I think that guy's a guide. He might say something, but
it's really interesting. I just noticed this. I haven't noticed that before, but that seems to be like an Audi knob that could fit into
one of the like niches.
Yeah. And look at the rose quartz, how whatever it was pushed it out and it landed on the stone tiles. But you can really see the precision work right over here and right on these edges. This is this just time that created this break of the rock?
Yeah.
It's like tiling for floors.
Yeah.
And they're very precisely cut. And so this might have been one of the foundations of the site.
Right.
And you can see now, after this destruction that hit and blew these stones away, the later culture of Inca built right on top. So this might have been just pure platform.
Right.
Still have vestiges of the Hanampacha over here in the megalithic. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's like.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the Hanampacha, then the megalithic is incorporated into that as a sign of respect, and then the Inca's building on top of the megalithic as a sign of respect, and maybe also the Hanampacha. And it's layers and layers of history and architecture that is unfortunately still getting bundled all together into the same chronology, and I just don't think that's sensible at all.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense. I mean, look at these blocks, and you cannot comprehend a Bronze Age civilization leveraging these. And
yeah, it is claimed like the Inca, basically used ropes, but these had to come from the quarry over here.
Right, right, right.
And so it is believed they rolled them down like the mountain, but the fact that we don't see much breakage The breakage we do see probably came from the catastrophe that jumbled these rocks and threw them everywhere.
As we near the top of Olente Tambo, the megalithic work is replaced by almost entirely rough-cut, mortar-using walls. So this is a very clearly Inca construction at the crest of the megalithic complex. There are elements of what the locals call Hanampacha, which is the first world architecture, which almost exclusively is cut into the bedrock directly, and often demonstrates quite a sophisticated hydrological knowledge for channeling water through the stone, something that we'll see more evidence for when we get back down to the bottom of this site. But this is a very important area to showcase the stark differences. It's a lovely series of structures, but let's be honest, these structures don't hold a candle to the level of sophistication and advanced engineering represented by the megalithic work just below it. And yet, once again, we see these simpler structures have managed to survive the test of time far better than the megalithic work, which makes no sense. It doesn't make sense if it was a geological event, and it doesn't make sense if it was Spanish conquistadors, because how could the Spanish conquistadors destroy huge multi-ton megaliths with gunpowder, which is not strong enough, they didn't even have dynamite, but they didn't bother blowing up the really easy to destroy buildings. I mean, if I took a sledgehammer to these structures, I could bring them down. So isn't it weird how they're standing almost completely perfect? Little bit of degradation, some bits falling down, but these walls, based on what you see with the megalithic structures, these walls should be turned to dust, but they're completely freestanding and fine. That's a massive problem. And it's brilliant that in Olente Tambo, you actually have a physical juxtaposition, a real in-your-face contrast of incredibly, incredibly sophisticated and incredibly simple, very basic, hugely damaged, mainly still standing, and we're being told that these two overlap on the same chronology. Nana, sorry, doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
Best work for the high temple work.
I think the Sacred Valley of Peru might be one of the most jaw-dropping areas of the world I've ever been to.